Maybe it's silly, but I always loved our national anthem. It was one of my favorite songs to sing. The picture of the royal family came into view. Standing at a podium was King Clarkson. His advisors, who had updates on infrastructure and some environmental concerns, were seated to one side, and the camera cut to show them. It looked like there would be several announcements tonight. On the left of the screen, the Queen and Prince Maxon sat in their typical cluster of throne-like seats and elegant clothes, looking regal and important. "There's your boyfriend, Ams," May announced, and everyone laughed. I looked closely at Maxon. I guess he was handsome in his own way, not at all like Aspen, though. His hair was a honey color, and his eyes were brown. He kind of looked like summertime, which I guess was attractive to some people. His hair was cropped short and neatly done, and his gray suit was perfectly fitted to him. But he sat way too rigidly in his chair. He looked so uptight. His clean hair was too perfect, his tailored suit too crisp. He seemed more like a painting than a person. I almost felt bad for the girl who ended up with him. That would probably be the most boring life imaginable. I focused on his mother. She looked serene. She sat up in her chair too, but not in an icy way. I realized that, unlike the king and Prince Maxon, she hadn't grown up in the palace. She was a celebrated daughter of Ilya. She might have been someone like me. The king was already talking, but I had to know. "Mom?" I whispered, trying not to distract Dad. "Yes?" "The queen. What was she? Her caste, I mean." Mom smiled at my interest. "A 4. A 4. She'd spent her formative years working in a factory or a shop, or maybe on a farm. I wondered about her life. Did she have a large family? She probably hadn't had to worry about food growing up. Were her friends jealous of her when she was chosen? If I had any really close friends, would they be jealous of me? That was stupid. I wasn't going to be picked. Instead, I focused on the king's words.
"Just this morning, another attack in New Asia rocked our bases. It has left our troops slightly outnumbered, but we are confident that with the fresh draft next month will come lifted morale, not to mention a swelling of fresh forces."
I hated war. Unfortunately, we were a young country that had to protect itself against everyone. It wasn't likely this land would survive another invasion. After the king gave us an update on a recent raid on a rebel camp, the financial team updated us on the status of the debt, and the head of the infrastructure committee announced that in 2 years, they were planning to start work on rebuilding several highways, some of which hadn't been touched since the Fourth World War. Finally, the last person, the master of events, came to the podium.
"Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of Ilya. As you all know, notices to participate in the selection were recently distributed in the mail. We have received the first count of submitted applications, and I am pleased to say that thousands of the beautiful women in Ilya have already placed their names in the lottery for the selection."
In the back corner, Maxon shifted a little in his seat. Was he sweating?
"On behalf of the royal family, I would like to thank you for your enthusiasm and patriotism. With any luck, by the new year, we will be celebrating the engagement of our beloved Prince Maxon to an enchanting, talented, and intelligent daughter of Ilya."
The few advisors sitting there applauded. Maxon smiled but looked uncomfortable. When the applause died down, the master of events started up again.
"Of course, we will be having lots of programming dedicated to meeting the young women of the selection, not to mention specials on their lives at the palace. We could not think of anyone more qualified to guide us through this exciting time than our very own Mr. Gavril Fadé."
There was another smattering of applause, but it came from my mom and May this time. Gavril Fadé was a legend. For something like 20 years, he'd done running commentary on Grateful Feast parades and Christmas shows and anything they celebrated at the palace. I'd never seen an interview with members of the royal family or their closest friends and family done by anyone but him.
"Oh, America, you could meet Gavril," Mom crooned.
"He's coming," May said, flailing her little arms. Sure enough,
There was Gavril, sauntering onto the set in his crisp blue shirt. He was maybe in his late 40s, and he always looked sharp. As he walked across the stage, the light caught on the pin of his lapel, a flash of gold that was similar to the forte signs in my piano music.
"Good evening, Ilya," he sang. "I have to say that I am so honored to be a part of the selection. Lucky me, I get to meet 35 beautiful women. What idiot wouldn't want my job?"
He winked at us through the camera.
"But before I get to meet these lovely ladies, one of which will be our new princess, I have the pleasure of speaking with the man of the hour, our Prince Maxon."
With that, Maxon walked across the carpeted stage to a pair of chairs set up for him and Gavril. He straightened his tie and adjusted his suit, as if he needed to look more polished. He shook Gavril's hand and sat across from him, picking up a microphone. The chair was high enough that Maxon propped his feet on a bar in the middle of the legs. He looked much more casual that way.
"Nice to see you again, Your Highness." "Thank you, Gavril. The pleasure is all mine."
Maxon's voice was as poised as the rest of him. He radiated waves of formality. I wrinkled my nose at the idea of just being in the same room with him.
"In less than a month, 35 women will be moving into your house. How do you feel about that?"
Maxon laughed.
"Honestly, it is a bit nerve-wracking. I'm imagining there will be much more noise with so many guests. I'm looking forward to it all the same. Have you asked dear old Dad for any advice on how he managed to get a hold of such a beautiful wife when it was his turn?"
Both Maxon and Gavril looked over to the king and queen, and the camera panned over to show them looking at each other, smiling and holding hands. It seemed genuine, but how would we know any better?
"I haven't, actually. As you know, the situation in New Asia has been escalating, and I've been working with him more on the military side of things. Not much time to discuss girls in there."
Mom and May laughed. I suppose it was kind of funny.
"We don't have much time left, so I'd like to have one more question. What do you imagine your perfect girl would be like?"
Maxon looked taken aback. It was hard to tell, but he may have been blushing.
"Honestly, I don't know. I think that's the beauty of the selection. No two women who enter will be exactly the same, not in looks or preferences or disposition. And through the process of meeting them and talking to them, I'm hoping to discover what I want, to find it along the way."
Maxon smiled.
"Thank you, Your Highness. That was very well said. And I think I speak for all of Ilya when I wish you the best of luck."
Gavril held out his hand for another shake.
"Thank you, sir,"
Maxon said. The camera didn't cut away quick enough, and you could see him looking over to his parents, wondering if he'd said the right thing. The next shot zoomed in on Gavril's face, so there was no way to see what their response was.
"I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this evening. Thank you for watching the Ilya Capital Report, and we'll see you next week."
With that, the music played and credits rolled. "America and Maxon sitting in a tree," sang May. I grabbed a pillow and chucked it at her, but I couldn't help laughing at the thought. Maxon was so stiff and quiet. It was hard to imagine anyone being happy with such a wimp. I spent the rest of the night trying to ignore May's teasing, and finally went to my room to be alone. Even the thought of being near Maxon Shreve made me uncomfortable. May's little jabs stayed in my head all night, and made it difficult for me to sleep. It was hard to pinpoint the sound that woke me. But once I was aware of it, I tried to survey my room in absolute stillness, just in case someone was there. Tap, tap, tap. I turned over slowly to face my window, and there was Aspen, grinning at me. I got out of bed and tiptoed to the door, shutting it all the way and locking it. I went back to the bed, unlocking and slowly opening my window. A rush of heat that had nothing to do with summer swept over me, as Aspen climbed through the window and onto my bed. "What are you doing here?" I whispered, smiling in the dark.
"I had to see you."
He breathed into my cheek as he wrapped his arms around me, pulling me down until we were lying side by side on the bed. "I have so much to tell you, Aspen."
"Shh, don't say a word. If anyone hears, there will be hell to pay. Just let me look at you."
And so I obeyed, I stayed there quiet and still, while Aspen stared into my eyes. When he had his fill of that, he went to nuzzling his nose into my neck and hair. And then, his hands were moving up and down the curve of my waist, to my hip, over and over. I heard his breathing get heavy, and something about that drew me in. His lips hidden in my neck started kissing me. I drew in sharp breaths. I couldn't help it. Aspen's lips traveled up to my chin and covered my mouth, effectively silencing my gasps. I wrapped myself around him, a rushed grabbing and the humidity of the night covering us both in sweat. It was a stolen moment. Aspen's lips finally slowed, though I was nowhere near ready to stop. But we had to be smart. If we went any further, and there was ever evidence of it, we'd be thrown in jail. Another reason everyone married young. Waiting is torture.
I should go, he whispered.
But I want you to stay. My lips were by his ears. I could smell his soap again.
America, singer, one day you will fall asleep in my arms every night, and you'll wake up to my kisses every morning. And then some.
I bit my lip at the thought.
But now, I have to go. We're pushing our luck.
I sighed and loosened my grip. He was right.
I love you, America.
I love you, Aspen. These secret moments would be enough to get me through everything coming. Mom's disappointment when I wasn't chosen. The work I'd have to do to help Aspen save. The eruption that was coming when he asked Dad for my hand. And whatever struggles we'd go through once we were married. None of it mattered. Not if I had Aspen. Chapter 5. A week later, I beat Aspen to the treehouse. It took a bit of work to get the things I wanted up there in silence, but I managed. I rearranged the plates one last time as I heard someone climbing the tree.
Boo!
Aspen started and laughed. I lit the new candle I'd purchased just for us. He crossed the treehouse to kiss me. And after a moment, I started talking about all that had happened during the week. I never got to tell you about the synapse, I said, excited about the news.
How did it go? Mom said it was packed.
It was crazy, Aspen. You should have seen what people were wearing. And I'm sure you know that it's less of a lottery than they're claiming. So I was right all along. There are far more interesting people to choose in Carolina than me, so this was all a big nothing.
All the same, thank you for doing it. It means a lot to me.
His eyes were still focused on me. He hadn't even bothered looking around the treehouse, drinking me in like always. Well, the best part is that since my mother had no idea I had already promised you, she bribed me to sign up. I couldn't contain my smile. This week, families had already started throwing parties for their daughters, sure that they would be the one chosen for the selection. I'd sung at no less than 7 celebrations, packing 2 into a night for the sake of getting my own paychecks. And Mom was true to her word. It felt liberating to have money that was mine.
Bribed you with what?
His face was lit with excitement. Money, of course. Look, I made you a feast. I pulled away from him and started grabbing plates. I'd made too much dinner on purpose to save him some, and I'd been baking pastries for days. May and I both had a terrible addiction to sweets anyway, and she was jubilant that this was how I was choosing to spend my money.
What's all this?
Food. I made it myself. I was beaming with pride at my efforts. Finally, tonight, Aspen could be full. But his smile faded as he took in plate after plate. Aspen, is something wrong?
This isn't right.
He shook his head and looked away from the treats. What do you mean?
America, I'm supposed to be providing for you. It's humiliating for me to come here and have you do all this for me.
But I give you food all the time.
Your little leftovers. You think I don't know better? I don't feel bad about taking something you don't want, but to have you... I'm supposed to.
Aspen, you give me things all the time. You provide for me. I have all my
pennies? You think bringing that up now is a good idea? Don't you know how much I hate that?
that I love to hear you sing, but can't really pay you when everyone else does? You shouldn't pay me at all. It's a gift. Anything of mine you want, you can have. I knew we needed to be careful to keep our voices down, but at the moment, I didn't care.
I'm not some charity case, America. I'm a man. I'm supposed to be a provider.
Aspen put his hands in his hair. I could see his breaths coming fast. Just like always, he was thinking his way through the argument. But this time, there was something different in his eyes. Instead of his face growing focused, it fell into confusion, 1 millimeter at a time. My anger faded quickly as I saw him there, looking so lost. I felt guilty instead. I had meant to spoil him, not humiliate him. "I love you," I whispered. He shook his head.
"I love you too, America."
But he still wouldn't look at me. I picked up some of the bread I'd made and put it in his hand. He was too hungry not to take a bite. "I didn't mean to hurt you. I thought it would make you happy."
"No, Mare. I love it. I can't believe you did all this for me. It's just, you don't know how much it bothers me that I can't do this for you. You deserve better."
Mercifully, he kept eating as he spoke. "You've got to stop thinking of me that way. When it's just you and me, I'm not a 5 and you're not a 6. We're just Aspen and America. And I don't want anything in the world but you."
"But I can't stop thinking that way."
He looked at me. "That's how I was raised. Since I was little, it was 6s are born to serve, and 6s aren't meant to be seen. My whole life, I've been taught to be invisible." He grabbed my hand in a vice-like grip.
"If we're together, Mare, you're going to be invisible too. And I don't want that for you."
"Aspen, we've talked about this. I know that things will be different, and I'm prepared. I don't know how to make it any clearer." I put my hand on his heart. "The moment you're ready to ask, I'm ready to say yes." It was terrifying to put myself out there like that, to make it absolutely clear how deep my affections ran. He knew what I was saying, but if making myself vulnerable meant he'd be brave, I'd endure it. His eyes searched mine. If he was looking for doubt, he was wasting his time. Aspen was the one thing I was sure of.
"No."
"What?"
"No."
The word felt like a slap across the face. "Aspen?"
"I don't know how I fooled myself into ever thinking this would work."
He ran his fingers through his hair again, like he was trying to get all the thoughts he'd ever had about me out of his head. "But you just said you loved me."
"I do, Mare. That's the point. I can't make you like me. I can't stand the thought of you hungry or cold or scared. I can't make you a 6.
I felt the tears coming. He didn't mean that. He couldn't. But before I could tell him to take it back, Aspen was already moving to crawl out of the treehouse. Where are you going?"
"I'm leaving. I'm going home. I'm sorry I did this to you, America. It's over now."
"What?"
"It's over. I won't come around anymore. Not like this."
I started crying. "Aspen, please. Let's talk about this. You're just upset."
"I'm more upset than you know, but not at you. I just can't do this, Mare. I can't."
"Aspen, please." He pulled me in tight and kissed me. Really kissed me. One last time. Then he disappeared into the night. And because this country is the way it is, because of all the rules that had kept us in hiding, I couldn't even call out after him. I couldn't tell him I loved him one more time. As the next few days passed, I knew my family could tell that something was wrong, but they must have assumed I was nervous about the selection. I wanted to cry 1,000 times, but held it back. I just pushed on to Friday, hoping that everything would go back to normal after the Capitol report broadcast the names. I dreamed it up in my head, how they would announce Celia or Camber, and my mother would be disappointed, but not as disappointed as she would have been if it was a stranger. Dad and May would be excited for them. Our families were close. I knew Aspen had to be thinking about me like I'd been thinking about him. I bet he'd be over here before the program was over, begging me for forgiveness and asking for my hand. It would be a little premature, since there was nothing guaranteed for the girls, but he could capitalize on the general excitement of the day. It would probably smooth a lot of things over. In my head, it worked out perfectly. In my head, everyone was happy. It was 10 minutes until the report came on, and we were all in place early. I couldn't imagine we were alone in not wanting to miss a second of this announcement. I remember when Queen Amberlee was chosen. Oh, I knew from the beginning she would make it. Mom was making popcorn, as if this were a movie. "Did you go in the lottery, Mama?" Jared asked. "No, sweetie. Mama was 2 years too young for the cutoff. But lucky me, I got your father instead." She smiled and winked. Whoa, she must have been in a good mood. I couldn't remember the last time she was that affectionate toward Dad. "Queen Amberlee is the best queen ever. She's so beautiful and smart. Every time I see her on TV, I want to be just like her," May said with a sigh. "She is a good queen," I added quietly. Finally, 8 o'clock rolled around, and the national emblem rose on the screen, along with the instrumental version of our anthem. Was I actually trembling? I was so ready for this to be over. The king appeared and gave a brief update on the war. The other announcements were also short. It seemed like everyone there was in a good mood. I guess this must be exciting for them, too. Finally, the master of events came up and introduced Gavril, who walked straight over to the royal family.
"Good evening, Your Majesty," he said to the king. "Gavril, always good to see you."
The king was borderline giddy.
"Looking forward to the announcement?" "Ah, yes. I was in the room yesterday as a few were drawn. All very lovely girls." "So, you know who they are already?" Gavril exclaimed. "Just a few, just a few. Did he happen to share any of this information with you, sir?"
Gavril turned to Maxon.
"Not at all. I'll see them when everyone else does,"
Maxon replied. You could see he was trying to hide his nerves. I realized my palms were sweating.
"Your Majesty,"
Gavril went over to the queen.
"Any advice for the selected?"
She smiled her serene smile. I didn't know what the other women looked like when she went through the selection, but I couldn't imagine anyone being as graceful and lovely as her. "Enjoy your last night as an average girl. Tomorrow, no matter what, your life will be different forever. And it's old advice, but it's good. Be yourself."
"Wise words, my queen, wise words. And with that, let us reveal the 35 young ladies chosen for the selection. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in congratulating the following daughters of Ilia."
The screen changed to the national emblem. In the upper right-hand corner, there was a small box with Maxon's face to see his reactions as the pictures went across the monitor. He would already be making decisions about them, the way we all would. Gavril had a set of cards in his hands, ready to read out the names of the girls whose worlds, according to the queen, were about to change forever.
"Miss Elena Stoles of Hansport, 3.
A photo of a tiny girl with porcelain skin popped up. She looked like a lady. Maxon beamed.
"Miss Tuesday Keeper of Waverly, 4.
A girl with freckles appeared. She looked older, more mature. Maxon whispered something to the king.
"Miss Fiona Castley of Paloma, 3.
A brunette with smoldering eyes this time. Maybe my age, but she seemed more experienced. I turned to Mom and May on the couch. "Doesn't she seem awfully..."
"Miss America Singer of Carolina, 5.
I whipped my head back around, and there it was. The picture of me, just after I'd found out Aspen was saving up to marry me. I looked radiant, hopeful, beautiful. I looked like I was in love. And some idiot thought that love was for Prince Maxon. Mom screamed in my ear, and May jumped up, sending popcorn everywhere. Jared got excited too and started dancing. Dad, it's hard to say, but I think he was secretly smiling behind his book. I missed what Maxon's expression was. The phone rang, and it didn't stop for days. Chapter 6. The next week was full of officials swarming into our house to prepare me for the selection. There was an obnoxious woman who seemed to think I'd lied about half my application, followed by an actual palace guard who came to go over security measures with the local soldiers and give our home a once-over. Apparently, I didn't have to wait until getting to the palace to worry about potential rebel attacks. Wonderful. We got two phone calls from a woman named Sylvia, who sounded very perky and businesslike at the same time, wanting to know if we needed anything. My favorite visitor was a lean, goateed man who came to measure me for my new wardrobe. I wasn't sure how I felt about wearing dresses that were as formal as the Queen's all the time, but I was looking forward to a change. The last of these visitors came on Wednesday afternoon, 2 days before I was to leave. He was in charge of going over all the official rules with me. He was incredibly skinny, with greasy black hair that was smoothed back, and he kept sweating. Upon entering the house, he asked if there was someplace private we could talk. That was my first clue that something was going on.
"Well, we can sit in the kitchen if that's all right," Mom suggested.
"Actually, any place is fine. I just think you might want to ask your younger daughter to leave the room."
What could he possibly say that May couldn't hear?
"Mama,"
she asked, sad to be missing out. "May, darling, go and work on your painting. You've been neglecting your work a bit this last week."
"But..."
"Let me walk you out, May," I offered, looking at the tears welling up in her eyes. When we were down the hall and no one could hear, I pulled her in for a hug.
"Don't worry," I whispered. "I'll tell you everything tonight. Promise."
To her credit, she didn't blow our cover by jumping up and down as usual. She merely nodded somberly and went away to her little corner in Dad's studio. Mom made tea for Skinny, and we sat at the kitchen table to talk. He had a stack of papers and a pen laid out next to another folder with my name on it. He arranged his information neatly and spoke.
"I'm sorry to be so secretive, but there are certain things I need to address that are unfit for young ears."
Mom and I exchanged a quick glance.
"Miss Singer, this is going to sound harsh, but as of last Friday, you are now considered property of Ilya. You must take care of your body from here on out. I have several forms for you to sign as we go through this information. Any failure to comply on your part will result in your immediate removal from the selection. Do you understand?"
"Yes," I said warily.
"Very good. Let's start with the easy stuff. These are vitamins. Since you are a 5, I'll assume that you may not always have access to necessary nutrition. You must take one of these every day. You're on your own now, but at the palace you'll have someone to help you."
He passed a large bottle across the table to me, along with a form I had to sign to say that I had received it. I had to stop myself from laughing. Who needs help taking a pill?
"I have with me the physical from your doctor. Not much of a worry there. You seem to be in excellent health, although he said you haven't been sleeping well."
Just with the excitement, it's been a little hard to sleep." It was almost the truth. The days were whirlwinds of palace preparation, but at night, when I was still, I thought of Aspen. It was the one time I couldn't avoid him coming into my mind, and it appeared he wasn't eager to leave.
"I see. Well, I can have some sleep aids here tonight if you need them. We want you well rested."
"No, I don't." "Yes," Mom interrupted. "Sorry, honey, but you look exhausted. Please, get her the sleep aids."
"Yes, ma'am."
Skinny made another note on my file.
"Moving on. Now, I know this is personal, but I've had to discuss it with every contestant. So please, don't be shy."
He paused.
"I need confirmation that you are, in fact, a virgin."
Mom's eyes nearly popped out. So this was why May had to leave. "Are you serious?" I couldn't believe they'd send someone out to do this. At least send a woman.
"I'm afraid so. If you're not, we need to know that immediately."
Ew. And with my mother in the room. I know the law, sir. I'm not stupid. Of course I am.
Consider, please, if you are found to be lying.
For goodness sake, America's never even had a boyfriend, Mom said. That's right.
I grabbed that rope, hoping it would end this discussion.
Very good. I'll just need you to sign this form to confirm your statement.
I rolled my eyes, but obeyed. I was glad Ilya existed, considering that this very land had nearly been turned to rubble. But these regulations were starting to make me feel like I was suffocating, like there were invisible chains keeping me down. Laws about who you could love, forms about your virginity being intact. It was infuriating.
I need to go over the rules with you. They are very straightforward, and you shouldn't have a hard time complying. If you have any questions, just speak up.
He looked up from his stack of forms and made eye contact with me. I will, I mumbled.
You cannot leave the palace of your own accord. You have to be dismissed by the prince himself. Even the king and queen cannot force you out. They can tell the prince they do not approve of you, but he makes every decision on who stays and who leaves. There is no set timeline for the selection. It can be over in a matter of days or stretch into years.
Years? I asked in horror. The thought of being gone that long set me on edge.
Not to worry. The prince is unlikely to let it go for very long. This is a moment for him to show his decisiveness, and allowing the selection to drag on doesn't look good. But should he choose to take it that way, you will be required to stay for as long as the prince needs to make his choice.
My fear must have shown on my face, because Mom reached over and patted my hand. Skinny, however, was unfazed.
You do not arrange your times with the prince. He will seek you out for one-on-one company if he wants it. If you are in a larger social setting and he is present, that is different. But you do not go to him without invitation. While no one expects you to get along with the other 34 contestants, you are not to fight with them or sabotage them. If you are found laying hands on another contestant, causing her stress, stealing from her, or doing anything that might diminish her personal relationship with the prince, it is in his hands whether or not to dismiss you on the spot. Your only romantic relationship will be with Prince Maxon. If you are found writing love notes to someone here, or are caught in a relationship with another person in the palace, that is considered treason, and it is punishable by death.
Mom rolled her eyes at that one, though that might be the only rule that worried me.
If you are found breaking any of Ilya's written laws, you will receive the punishment tied to that offense. Your status as one of the selected does not put you above the law. You must not wear any clothes or eat any food that is not specifically provided for you by the palace. This is a security issue, and will be strictly enforced. On Fridays, you will be present for all Capitol Report broadcasts. On occasion, but always with warning, there will be cameras or photographers in the palace, and you will be courteous and allow them to see your lifestyle with the prince. For each week you stay at the palace, your family will be compensated. I will give you your first check before I leave. Also, should you not stay at the palace, an aide will help you adjust to your life after the selection. Your aide will assist you with final preparations before you leave for the palace, as well as help you seek new housing and employment afterward. Should you make it to the top 10, you will be considered an elite. Once you reach that status, you will be required to learn about the particular inner workings of the life and obligations you would have as a princess. You are not permitted to seek out such details before that time. From this moment on, your status is a 3.
A 3? Mom and I both exclaimed.
Yes. After the selection, it's hard for girls to go back to their old lives. 2s and 3s do fine, but 4s and below tend to struggle. You are a 3 now, but the rest of your family remain 5s. Should you win, you and your entire family become 1s as members of the royal family.
1s. The word was faint on Mom's lips.
And should you go to the end, you will marry Prince Maxon and become the crowned princess of Ilya and take on all the rights and responsibilities of that title. Do you understand?
Yes. That part, big as it sounded, was the easiest to bear.
Very good. If you could just sign this form, saying you've heard all the official rules. And Mrs. Singer, if you could just sign this form, saying you received your check, please.
I didn't see the sum,
but it made her eyes well. I was miserable at the idea of leaving, but I was sure if I went there only to be sent back the next day, this check alone would provide us with enough money for a very comfortable year. And when I got back, everyone would want me to sing. I'd have plenty of work. But would I be allowed to sing as a three? If I had to pick one of the career paths of a three, I think I'd teach. Maybe I could at least help others learn music. Skinny collected his forms and stood to leave, thanking us for our time and for the tea. I would have to interact with only one more official before I left, and that would be my aide, the person who would guide me through getting from my house to the send-off to the airport. And then I'd be on my own. Our guest asked if I would show him to the door, and Mom consented, as she wanted to start dinner. I didn't like being alone with him, but it was a short walk.
"One more thing,"
Skinny said with his hand on the door.
"This isn't exactly a rule, but it would be unwise of you to ignore it. When you are invited to do something with Prince Maxon, you do not refuse, no matter what it is. Dinner, outings, kisses, more than kisses, anything. Do not turn him down."
"Excuse me? Was the same man who made me sign a form affirming my purity, suggesting that I let Maxon have it if he wanted it?"
"I know it sounds unbecoming, but it would not behoove you to reject the prince under any circumstances. Good evening, Miss Singer."
I was disgusted, revolted. The law, Ilian law, was that you were to wait until marriage. It was an effective way of keeping diseases at bay, and it helped keep the caste intact. Illegitimates were thrown into the street to become aides, and the penalty for being discovered, either by a person or through pregnancy, was jail time. If someone was even suspicious, you could spend a few nights in a cell. True, it restricted me from being intimate with the one person I loved, and that had bothered me. But now that Aspen and I were over, I was glad I'd been forced to save myself. I was infuriated. Hadn't I just signed a form saying I'd be punished if I broke Ilian law? I wasn't above the rules. That was what he'd said. But apparently the prince was. And I felt dirty. Lower than an eight. "America, honey, it's for you," Mom sang. I'd heard the doorbell myself, but was in no rush to answer it. If this was another person asking for an autograph, I didn't think I'd be able to handle it. I walked down the hall and turned the corner. There, with a handful of wildflowers, was Aspen.
"Hello, America."
His voice was restrained, almost professional. "Hello, Aspen." Mine was weak.
"These are from Camber and Celia. They wanted to wish you luck."
He closed the distance between us and gave me the flowers. Flowers from his sisters, not from him. "That's awfully sweet," Mom exclaimed. I had almost forgotten she was in the room. "Aspen, I'm glad you're here." I tried to sound as removed as he had. "I've made a mess trying to pack. Could you help me clean?" With my mom there, he had to accept. As a general rule, sixes didn't turn down work. We were the same in that way. He exhaled through his nose and nodded once. Aspen followed me down the hall. I thought about how many times I'd wanted just this. For Aspen to walk in my house and come to my room. Could the circumstances have been any worse? I pushed open the door to my room, and Aspen laughed out loud.
"Did you let a dog do your packing?"
"Shut up. I had a little trouble finding what I was looking for." In spite of myself, I smiled. He went to work, setting things upright and folding shirts. I helped, of course.
"Aren't you taking any of these clothes?" he whispered.
"No, they dress me from tomorrow on out."
"Oh, wow."
"Were your sisters disappointed?"
"No, actually."
He shook his head in disbelief.
"The moment they saw your face, the whole house erupted. They're crazy about you. My mom in particular."
"I love your mom. She's always really nice to me." A few minutes passed in silence as my room went slowly back to normal.
"Your picture,"
he began,
was absolutely beautiful.
It hurt to have him tell me I was beautiful. It wasn't fair, not after everything he'd done.
It was for you, I whispered.
What?
It's just, I thought you were going to be proposing soon.
My voice was thick. Aspen was quiet for a moment, choosing his words.
I've been thinking about it, but it doesn't matter anymore.
It does. Why didn't you tell me?
He rubbed his neck, deciding.
I was waiting.
For what?
What could possibly be worth waiting for?
For the draft.
That was an issue. It was hard to know whether to wish to be drafted or not. In Ilya, every 19-year-old male was eligible for it. Soldiers were chosen at random twice a year, to catch everyone within 6 months of their birthday. You serve from the time you were 19 until you were 23, and it was coming soon. We'd talked about it, of course, but not in a realistic way. I guess we both hoped that if we ignored the draft, it would ignore us, too. It was a blessing, in that being a soldier meant you were an automatic, too. The government trained you and paid you for the rest of your life. The drawback was you never knew where you would go. They sent you away from your province for sure. They assumed you were more likely to be lenient with people you knew. You might end up at the palace, or in some other province's local police force. Or you might end up in the army, shipped off to war. Not very many men sent into battle made it home. If a man wasn't married before the draft, he'd almost always wait. You'd be separated from your wife for 4 years at the very best. At the worst, she'd be a young widow.
I didn't want to do that to you, he whispered.
I understand. He straightened up, trying to change the subject.
So, what are you taking to the palace?
A change of clothes to wear whenever they finally kick me out. Some pictures and books. I've been told I won't need my instruments. Anything I want will be there already. So that little bag there, that's it. The room was tidy now, and that backpack seemed huge for some reason. The flowers he'd brought looked so bright on my desk, compared to the drab things I owned. Or maybe it was just that everything seemed paler now that it was over.
That's not much, he noted.
I've never needed very much to be happy. I thought you knew that. He closed his eyes.
Stop it, America. I did the right thing.
The right thing? Aspen, you made me believe we could do it. You made me love you. And then you talked me into this damn contest. Do you know they're practically shipping me off to be one of Maxon's playthings? He whipped his head around to face me.
What?
I'm not allowed to turn him down. Not for anything. Aspen looked sick, angry. His hands clenched up into fists.
Even if he doesn't want to marry you? He could.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I didn't know.
He took a few deep breaths.
But if he does pick you, that'll be good. You deserve to be happy.
That was it. I slapped him.
You idiot! I whisper yelled at him. I hate him. I loved you. I wanted you. All I ever wanted was you.
His eyes welled up, but I couldn't care. He'd hurt me enough, and now it was his turn.
I should go, he said, and started heading to the door.
Wait, I didn't pay you.
America, you don't have to pay me.
He went to leave again. Aspen Ledger, don't you dare move. My voice was fierce, and he stopped, finally paying attention to me.
That'll be good practice for when you're a one.
If it hadn't been for his eyes, I would have thought it was a joke, not an insult. I just shook my head and went to my desk, pulling out all the money I'd earned by myself. I put every last bit of it in his hands.
America, I'm not taking this.
The hell you aren't. I don't need it, and you do. If you ever loved me at all, you'll take it. Hasn't your pride done enough for us? I could feel a part of him shut down. He stopped fighting.
Fine.
And here. I dug behind my bed, pulled out my tiny jar of pennies, and poured them into his hand. One rebellious penny that must have been sticky stayed glued to the bottom. Those were always yours. You should use them. Now, I didn't have anything of his. And once he spent those pennies out of desperation, he wouldn't have anything of mine. I felt the hurt coming up. My eyes got wet, and I breathed hard to keep the sobs back.
I'm sorry, Mare. Good luck.
He shoved the money and the pennies into his pockets and ran out. This wasn't how I thought I'd cry. I was expecting huge, jarring sobs, not slow, tiny tears. I started to put the jar on a shelf, but I noticed that little penny again. I put my finger in the jar and got it unstuck. It rattled around in the glass all by itself. It was a hollow sound, and I could feel it echo in my chest. I knew, for better or for worse, I wasn't really free of Aspen. Not yet. Maybe not ever. I opened the backpack, put in my jar, and sealed it all away. May snuck into my room, and I took one of those stupid pills. I fell asleep holding her, finally feeling numb. Chapter 7. The next morning, I dressed myself in the uniform of the selected. Black pants, white shirt, and my province flower, a lily in my hair. My shoes I got to pick. I chose worn-out red flats. I figured I should make it clear from the start that I wasn't princess material. We were set to leave for the square shortly. Each of the selected was getting a send-off in her home province today, and I wasn't looking forward to mine. All those people staring, while I did nothing more than stand there. The whole thing already felt ridiculous, as I had to be driven the 2 short miles for security reasons. The day began uncomfortably. Kenna came with James to send me off, which was kind of her, considering she was pregnant and tired. Kota came by too, though his presence added more tension than ease. As we walked from our house to the car we'd been provided, Kota was by far the slowest, letting the few photographers and well-wishers who were there get a good look at him. Dad just shook his head. May was my only solace. She held my hand and tried to inject some of her enthusiasm into me. We were still linked when I stepped into the crowded square. It seemed like everyone in the province of Carolina came out to see me off, or just see what the big deal was. Standing on the raised stage, I could see the boundaries between the castes. Margareta Steins was a 3, and she and her parents were staring daggers at me. Tennille Digger was a 7, and she was blowing kisses. The upper caste looked at me like I'd stolen something that was theirs. The 4s on down were cheering for me, an average girl who'd been elevated. I became aware of what I meant to everyone here, as if I represented something for all of them. I tried to focus in on those faces, holding my head high. I was determined to do this well. I would be the best of us, the highest of the lows. It gave me a sense of purpose. America Singer, the champion of the lower castes. The mayor spoke with a flourish.
And Carolina will be cheering on the beautiful daughter of Magda and Shalom Singer, the new Lady America Singer.
The crowd clapped and cheered. Some threw flowers. I took in the sound for a moment, smiling and waving, and then went back to surveying the crowd, but this time, for a different purpose. I wanted to see his face one more time if I could. I didn't know if he would come. He told me I looked beautiful yesterday, but was even more distant and guarded than he had been in the treehouse. It was over, and I knew that. But you don't love someone for almost 2 years, and then turn it off overnight. It took a few passes of the crowd before I found him. I immediately wished I hadn't. Aspen was standing there with Brenna Butler in front of him, casually holding her around the waist and smiling. Maybe some people could turn it off overnight. Brenna was a 6 and about my age. Pretty enough, I supposed, though she didn't look a bit like me. I guessed she'd get the wedding and life he'd been saving for with me.
and apparently the draft didn't bother him so much anymore. She smiled at him and walked away to her family. Had he liked her all along? Was she the girl he saw every day, and I was the girl who fed him and showered him with kisses once a week? It occurred to me that maybe all the time he omitted in our stolen conversations wasn't simply long, boring hours of inventory. I was too angry to cry. Besides, I had admirers here who wanted my attention. So, without Aspen even knowing that I'd seen him, I went back to those adoring faces. I put my smile back on, bigger than ever, and started waving. Aspen would not have the satisfaction of breaking my heart anymore. He'd put me here, and I would just have to take advantage of it.
Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in sending off America Singer, our favorite daughter of Ilya, the mayor called.
Behind me, a small band played the national anthem. More cheers, more flowers. Suddenly, the mayor was at my ear.
Would you like to say something, dear?
I didn't know how to say no without being rude. Thank you, but I'm so overwhelmed, I don't think I could. He cupped my hands in his.
Of course, dear girl. Don't you worry. I'll take care of everything. They'll train you for this kind of thing at the palace. You'll need it.
The mayor then told the gathered crowd of my attributes, slyly mentioning that I was very intelligent and attractive for a 5. He didn't seem too bad a guy, but sometimes, even the nicer members of the upper castes were condescending. I caught Aspen's face once more, as my eyes swept the crowd. He looked pained. It was the polar opposite of the face he'd worn with Brenna a few minutes ago. Another game? I broke my gaze. The mayor finished speaking, and I smiled and everyone cheered, as if he'd just given the most inspiring speech known to man. And suddenly, it was time to say goodbye. Mitzi, my aide, told me to say my farewells quietly and briefly, and then she'd escort me back to the car that would take me to the airport. Kota hugged me, telling me he was proud of me. Then, not so subtly, he told me to mention his art to Prince Maxon. I wriggled out of that embrace as gracefully as I could. Kenna was crying. I barely see you as it is. What will I do when you're gone? She cried. Don't worry, I'll be home soon enough. Yeah, right. You're the most beautiful girl in Ilya. He'll love you. Why did everyone think it all came down to beauty? Maybe it did. Maybe Prince Maxon didn't need a wife to speak to, just someone to look pretty. I actually shivered, considering that as my future. But there were many girls, much more attractive than me, going. Kenna was hard to hug over her pregnant belly, but we managed. James, who I really didn't know that well, hugged me too. Then it was Jared. Be a good boy, okay? Try the piano. I'll bet you're amazing. I expect to hear it all when I come home. Jared just nodded, abruptly sad. He threw his tiny arms around me.
I love you, America.
I love you too. Don't be sad. I'll be home soon. He nodded again, but crossed his arms to pout. I'd had no idea he'd take my leaving this way. It was the exact opposite of May. She was bouncing on her toes, absolutely giddy. Oh, America, you're going to be the princess, I know it. Oh, hush. I'd rather be an 8 and stay with you any day. Just be good for me and work hard. She nodded and bounced some more. And then it was time for Dad, who was close to tears. Daddy, don't cry. I fell into his arms.
Listen to me, kitten. Win or lose, you'll always be a princess to me.
Oh, Daddy. I finally started to cry. That was all it took to unleash the fear, the sadness, the worry, the nerves, the one sentence that meant none of it mattered. If I came back used and unwanted, he'd still be proud of me. It was too much to bear, to be loved that much. I'd be surrounded by scores of guards at the palace, but I couldn't imagine a place safer than my father's arms. I pulled away and turned to hug Mom. Do whatever they tell you. Try to stop sulking and be happy. Behave. Smile. Keep us posted. Ugh, I just knew you'd turn out to be special. It was meant to be sweet, but but it wasn't what I needed to hear. I wished she could have said that I was already something special to her, like I was to my father. But I guessed she would never stop wanting more for me, more from me. Maybe that's what mothers did.
Lady America, are you ready? Mitzi asked.
My face was away from the crowd, and I quickly wiped away my tears. Yes, all ready. My bag was waiting in the shiny white car. This was it. I started to walk to the edge of the stage, to the stairs.
Mare!
I turned. I'd know that voice anywhere.
America!
I searched and found Aspen's flailing arms. He was pushing the crowd aside, people protesting at his not-so-gentle shoves. Our eyes met. He stopped and stared. I couldn't read his face. Worry? Regret? Whatever it was too late. I shook my head. I was done with Aspen's games.
This way, Lady America, Mitzi instructed from the bottom of the stairs.
I gave myself a quick second to absorb my new name.
Goodbye, sweetheart,
my mother called, and I was led away. Chapter 8. I was the first one to the airport, and I was beyond terrified. The giddy excitement of the crowd had faded, and now I was faced with the horrific experience of flying. I would be traveling with three other selected girls, and I tried to get control of my nerves. I really didn't want to have a panic attack in front of them. I'd already memorized the names, faces, and casts of all the selected. It started as a therapeutic exercise, something to calm me down. I did the same thing with memorizing scales and bits of trivia. Originally, I had been looking for friendly faces, girls I might want to spend time with while I was there. I'd never really had a friend. I'd spent most of my childhood playing with Kenna and Kota. Mom did all my schooling, and she was the only person I worked with. When the older siblings moved on, I dedicated myself to May and Jared, and Aspen. But Aspen and I were never just friends. From the moment I became truly aware of him, I was in love with him. Now he was holding some other girl's hand. Thank goodness I was alone. I couldn't have handled the tears in front of the other girls. It ached. I ached. And there was nothing I could do. How in the hell did I get here? A month ago, I was sure of everything in my life. And now, any little piece of familiarity was gone. New home, new cast, new life. All because of a stupid piece of paper and a picture. I wanted to sit and cry, to mourn for everything I'd lost. I wondered if any of the other girls were sad today. I imagined that everyone except for me was celebrating, and I at least needed to look like I was too, because everyone would be watching. I braced myself for all that was coming, and I made myself be brave. As for everything I was leaving behind, I decided I'd do just that, leave him behind. The palace would be my sanctuary. I'd never think or say his name again. He wasn't allowed to come with me there. My own rule for this little adventure. No more. Goodbye, Aspen. About half an hour later, two girls in white shirts and black pants just like mine walked through the doors, with their own aides hauling their bags. They were both smiling, confirming my thought that I was the only one of the selected who might be depressed today. It was time to follow through on my promise. I put on a smile and stood to shake their hands.
Hi, I said brightly. I'm America.
I know, said the girl on the right. She was a blonde with brown eyes. I recognized her immediately as Marley Thames of Kent, a four. She didn't bother with my extended hand. She moved in for an immediate hug.
Oh,
I exhaled. I hadn't expected that. Though Marley was one of the girls whose faces seemed genuine and friendly, Mom had been telling me for the last week to look at these girls as enemies, and her offensive thinking had leaked into my own. So here I was, expecting at the very best a cordial welcome from the girls who were prepared to fight me to the death for someone I didn't want. Instead, I was embraced.
I'm Marley, and this is Ashley.
Yes, Ashley Briette of Allen's 3. She had blonde hair too, but much lighter than Marley's.